Hi, everybody. I hope you are great. I just want to say, one, thanks for getting on board. Thanks for supporting this podcast as much as you can. If you think it's worth listening to, share it with friends. I want to grow this into something significant because I want to keep doing good work and talking with good people and sharing good ideas and good messages because I want to create a little bit of a ripple effect around the world in the tiny little pond that is Craig Harper, and hopefully you can help me do that. If you think what I'm doing and what we're doing is of value or service to others, and you can get on board that train, then I would love your support and I'd love you to do that. I also want to thank Max's, who is, of course, my sponsor for this show, Max's and Maxine's, Australia's leading brand of sports nutrition for guys, and Maxine's, of course, for girls. They're Australian-owned, Australian-made. They've been around for about 3 decades, and I use them all the time. I know people say that when they do sponsorship stuff, but I actually do. I use Max's stuff every day, and I find them to be amazing. Of course, I eat normal food and healthy food, but I supplement with protein powder. I have a few bars, I have a few cookies, I have a few drinks, and they are a big part of what I do and how I stay in shape. So now, if you want to get on board the Max's train or the Maxine's train, go to www.maxes.com or www.maxinesburn.com. Best supplements in Australia, I think, high quality ingredients, create great results, help me stay where I'm going, go where I'm going, help me stay in shape, and they can become part of your regime as well. So thanks, Max's, thanks, Maxine's. Hi, everyone. Welcome to The U Project. Hi, Melissa.
Hello.
What have you been doing today?
What have I been doing today? Just some errands, running some errands.
Super efficient.
Yeah, updating software on the computer.
We're recording
nothing
this
really
Saturday.
Exciting.
Do you have a particular day of the week that you do all your domesticity on?
Not necessarily, because we travel a fair bit, so
do you smatter it through the week?
Yeah, kind of just depends.
What's your worst domestic thing? What's the thing that you hate or avoid?
I avoid cooking because I just can't cook, let's face it.
Yeah. You're not renowned for your cooking, are you?
No.
Do you think
I think it's safe that I stay away from it though, so I don't.
You did tell me that your mum's
or anyone food poisoning.
A shit cook.
Look, cooking's not really her forte either.
I just said that.
She can master a few dishes really well, but
what's your mum's forte?
Not really her forte.
Curried sausages.
Let's just say she can make a good chocolate cake.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
well, that's good.
She can make a great chocolate cake. Sausage casserole isn't really her thing.
It's not her forte.
Yeah, her version of that is boiled sausages with a little bit of gravy on
top.
That
sounds really terrible.
Yeah, nah.
I gave up sausages some time ago, and I won't be reintroducing them.
But no, she's definitely a better cook than I am. That is for
sure. Goody gumdrops.
That wouldn't be hard though.
So today's guest, Melissa, has come all the way from Canberra, and I was thinking before I introduce Michael Markovic, I'm going to call him Big Mike. No, I'm not, mate. I was thinking this dude's committed because he flew all the way from, Canberra, and I'm like, wow. And he's up and back. And I went, wow, all the way from Canberra, not staying, just coming down just for this. Mm. And then went, how long did it take you to, like, what time did you leave this morning? He goes, I left last night at 11 o'clock. I go, what kind of flight? He goes, no, I caught a bus. 7 hours
on a bus. That is super impressive.
Just to come to meet you. I think I'm just a detour to you. Yeah, that's what I think. Jeez, I should have taken my top off. Anyway, so this would be...
And then you're catching the bus back again tonight, aren't you?
Hang on, he's not introduced yet.
Oh, sorry.
Listener invasion number 5, would it be?
Yes, correct.
Hi, Michael.
How you going, mate?
I'm good. Thanks for coming all the way down.
Oh, mate, I'm just living the dream one day at a time.
How was the bus trip?
Oh, mate, it was worth it. That's all I'm saying.
It was worth it.
It's worth it.
Did you get just any? Started. Did you get any sleep?
Little bit. But, you know, they stopped the trip halfway through and said, everyone get out, have a bit of a rest in the middle of the night. I would have rather slept through, but...
I'm not sure about the logic of getting out and having a rest at 3 a.m. Surely you'd rest on the bus. Did you go, I was actually resting?
Yeah, pretty much. Logic would dictate that, but, you know, some people are a little bit, you know...
Would you go, I'm not sure if you understand, but this is the opposite of a fucking rest. This is interrupting my rest. This is anti-rest. How long was it 7 hours that you told me?
Yeah, close to about 8 hours actually.
8 hours. Mm. And you head back. What time is your... So what's the time now, Melissa? So it's
it is 2:02.
2:02. What time's your? Sorry, I'm going to keep talking while I take my windshield off. I should have done that earlier. What time is your bus back?
10 p.m. tonight.
That's hardcore.
That is commitment.
So you get back tomorrow at like 6 a.m. in Canberra.
Correct. Yep.
What's your plan for Sunday in Canberra? Is it sleep?
Trying to, but hit the gym first. You know, then I'll go to sleep.
Good boy. All right. So this is the snapshot. Is you're 31. You're doing a course to become a life coach. You're interested in personal development. Correct me if I get anything wrong. You've been training for a while. You told me you've been doing on and off Muay Thai for 10 years. You went to Thailand. You did some stuff there. You've had a few peaks and troughs like a lot of people. You had your four grandparents and your dad pass away within a relatively short period of time. Your dad died. You thought I wasn't listening. Your dad died when you were 22-ish. You've got a sister who's 10 years older than you with four kids. And listen to this, Melissa. Michael is the godfather to all four kids. And
wow.
And the dad isn't around, so he's very hands-on. Brush. So you're busy. So you're busy, dude. But you are interested in the way that we think and act and behave and create our own reality. And so you've opened the door on learning and educating yourself in the space of coaching. And how's it going? How's the course going?
Mate, it sounds like you're a fan of mine. That's really nice. Thank you for listening.
I pay attention.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's definitely something that sort of got me through a rough time, like you were saying. I have lost quite a few family members and a few little things didn't go my way. But it's through this coaching and through motivational speakers like yourself that have got me through this tough time. And now that it's helped me, I wanted to pay it forward in that respect as well and maybe help others, whether it's one or 50 million, who knows. But it's the fact that it's a passion of mine. And yeah, I got introduced to your work about 2 years ago. And I've definitely been a bigger fan as time's gone on. But it's definitely something that it's helped me. And and whatever else I can do to sort of benefit that, well, then so be it.
What's the stuff that, and I'm not fishing here, I'm just interested, because I'm always interested in when somebody listens to the podcast or reads my stuff or buys a book or comes to a workshop and has a good experience or at least a positive experience. What is the stuff that for you, like what do you like about it? What resonates for you? What's valuable for you? What's most helpful and practical for you?
So you mean like through your work?
Yeah, the stuff that you hear or read via my stuff.
Well, the one thing is that I've noticed with a lot of speakers and coaches is it's a lot of rah-rah sort of crap. And that doesn't resonate with me as much as the way you do things, which is a lot more raw, a lot more real. And that's what gravitates me towards buying your books or listening to your podcast, because you sort of get through all the fluff and just build it from there. And it once again just resonates with me. And that's the one thing that I'd love to pick your brain and know how you come to this sort of stuff, because it's sort of... I try to introduce your work to a lot of other people and it seems to sort of be sinking in as well, where the likes of other popular speakers, maybe not so much.
I think if I don't think of myself as gifted, but I think if I have an ability, it's to take, as I think I said something like this to you over when we're having coffee, there's really not a lot of new content. Really, everything's just old wisdom that we're resharing, apart from new information coming out with, you know, research and technology. But in terms of human behavior, the way we think, the way we process the world, the way that we create experiences, the way that we act and react and love and care and hate, and the way that we do all the human things that we do, I don't think there's a lot of new information at all. And so it's really, for me, it's really, how do I teach this idea? Like, for example, you know, I believe one of the biggest challenges for us as humans, period, is to manage our mind. So how do I talk about that in a way which is really understandable, is maybe a bit fun at times, is maybe a bit funny? And how do I teach things like subjective reality, which I think, now you're from Canberra, and I think when I could be wrong because I do lots of gigs, but I think when I was in Canberra, I said something like, when you came to my gig, you know, so we've got hundreds of people in the room, same place, same day, same time, all listening to the same guy share the same message, but no one's having the same experience, right? And everyone's like, yeah, that's true. That's true. We're all in the same place, the same macro reality. same temperature, same seats, same room, same day, same reason probably. That is, I want to learn, grow, evolve, change, yet no one's having the same experience. And so what that does is that kind of opens the door on our understanding to go, oh, okay, now he just explains subjective reality to me in a very practical way. And then the next thing would be, so why does that matter? Like, I get it, but why does that matter? Well, why it matters is because when you understand that that reality is personal and fluid, right, and that you can be in control of your reality, your personal reality, when you tell yourself a story that something is terrible, then your emotional system believes it, then your physiology believes it, now you are having a lived experience that is, in inverted commas, terrible. Why? Because of the situation, circumstance, environment? No, because that's the story. And so for me, what I think I'm okay at is taking stuff which can be bogged down in scientific bullshit and research that's too heavy. It's not that research doesn't matter or science doesn't matter, but it's trying to, how do I present these thoughts and ideas and strategies in a way which is really relatable, easily accessible to most people, really understandable, and really usable. And what I think what a lot of teachers, coaches, mentors, presenters don't do very well is they don't create great connection with an audience. And I think that's the priority for a speaker. And ironically, the priority is not do you have good content. The priority is can you create connection? Because if you have great content but no connection, you can't do the job. Hopefully you have great connection and somewhere between pretty good and really good content. So when I'm coaching coaches or I'm coaching teachers, it's like you're doing your course now, right? So you might go through that course. You might get, I don't know how it's assessed, it doesn't matter, but you might get 100 out of 100 and they go, Michael, we've never fucking seen anyone like you. You're a genius. You aced everything. Your essays were amazing. Your Q&A was brilliant. You're a fucking gun. And then we put you in front of a client and you're a complete dummy because you can't create any connection. You can't read nonverbal communication. You have no in-the-moment awareness. You don't have the emotional intelligence you need to execute, or you're just too nervous or too stressed, right? That wouldn't be the case with you, I'm pretty sure. But it's about all of that stuff all of the time. So for me, also, it's been very much, and I'll shut up after this, it's been very much on the job learning. You asked me about my first gig when we were having a coffee, and you said, how did that come about? And it came about because I was training a bloke who owned a company, and he said, you know, the shit you tell me, can you come and tell the same shit to my blokes? Because it was a timber yard and they're all men. I'm like, yeah, sure. And then that's where you... I think there's this aversion that some people have to being bad at things or being okay with being bad at things. And so my first presentation wasn't very good at all, and my second presentation wasn't very good at all. And my 10th one, maybe, I can't remember, was probably barely adequate. But over time, you go from poor to less poor to better to okay to, well, not bad at all to pretty good to really good, hopefully to excellent. That's the journey.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I definitely appreciate where you're coming from. So for a lot of aspiring coaches like myself, your biggest thing would be to develop the connection with the people, whether it's standing in front of one person or a couple of hundred. Mm. The ability to connect with your audience is paramount, regardless of what you're saying.
100%. Whether you're exactly right. Whether it's one or 100, whether it's a live audience, whether it's a podcast, whether it's radio, whether it's telly, whether it's somebody, a mum in a cafe who's telling me about her drug-addicted son who's having a breakdown, I need to find a way to create connection and hope and, you know, some kind of engagement. And that's really about self-awareness. What's it like being around me? What's the Craig experience or the Michael experience like for other human beings? Mm-hmm. Do they understand what I'm saying? Is my version of what I think I'm giving their version of what they are actually getting? Does this make sense? You know, and so I use, like you mentioned the swearing before, and I've said this many times, but I don't swear for effect. I just swear because if I'm talking to Melissa about what I'm doing tomorrow, I swear. If I'm hanging out with you and we're kicking a footy or having a sandwich or lifting some weights, I'll swear. I don't swear all the time. I just swear like most of my friends swear, incidental swearing. But what I don't do is get in front of people and then change the way I talk, you know. Having said that, I will qualify in corporate spaces, I do modify it a bit. But sometimes they will say, we just want you to be you.
And in schools.
And in schools for the little fuckers.
Well, you got to watch out for them. Yeah.
May not be quite so appropriate.
But you know what? I bet it would go better, yeah. Melissa, if I could go, g'day, you little fuckers, eyes to me. I bet they'd pay way more attention and I bet the teachers would secretly love it.
You have a point.
And by the way, all those kids swear more than me.
Yeah.
Well, not all. Because all the mums here going, my children don't speak, you potty mouth podcaster.
So with another thing, what you said, like self-reflection is obviously a big thing, being aware of how you are to other people. You know, in a world where we're constantly comparing ourselves, how hard do you feel it is to sort of take that time out to really go, these are my limits, this is what I need to focus on? Do you feel that people are able to do that easily, or it takes a bit of work to really understand where you are and how people perceive you?
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so let's start with the first bit, was in a world where we're constantly comparing ourselves to others. You know, I think there's two ways to compare. One's healthy, one's unhealthy, you know, and that might be, okay, so so you're 31, right? Yep. So you might go, Craig, when you were 31, and what were you doing? Just tell me kind of what your reality was and how, you know, so then, and you're going, well, I'm 31. So that's kind of more about research and awareness, and it's like, okay, so it's possible, you know, I opened my first proper business at 26, and so, you know, that's just you trying to get some insight into potential and possibilities, broadly speaking. Then the unhealthy version is where we're constantly trying to be someone else, or better than someone else, or prettier, or faster, or funnier, or then we're operating from a place of fear and insecurity, which is an unhealthy platform, rather than saying, you know what, like when people say to me, what do you, like you said to me, we spoke about Gary Vee, we spoke about Tony Robbins, we spoke about Kerwin Ray, we spoke about a lot of people who kind of exist vaguely in the space or in the same field as me. And I'm aware of all of them, and I think all of them are quite gifted. I don't want to be any of them, but I think they're all very good at what they do. And even with like Gary Vee, I said to you, you know, that there are people that are going to go, Gary V's a moron. There are people that are going to go, Gary V's the messiah. It depends on who's listening and what their style is, you know. So everyone, and it's the same with, you get any person who has an opinion, there'll be a polarized response. You know, people who have never met Tony Robbins hate him. I'm like, well, fuck, that's harsh, isn't it? You know, I've never met him, but I went to one of his, I reluctantly, and I've mentioned this, have I on the podcast?
You might have touched
I reluctantly was dragged along to a Tony Robbins event when I was, I can't exactly remember, might have been 24. And I went with a friend to kind of support her because she was like a fan, and I'm like, oh, she's like, I don't want to go on my own, I'll buy you a ticket. I'm like, fucking don't worry. I'm like, oh, is he the big cheesy dickhead with the fucking whopping teeth? And then, oh, God, and then, oh, Tony Robbins. I went along, and for about an hour I sat there with my shit attitude trying to find a problem with him, because I was the problem, and I wanted him to be bad because that would have suited me. And the more he spoke, the more enamored I was, and the more I got over my preconceived notion of what he was and who he was, and I started to be honest with myself and go, it's actually my issues, not his flaws. And I went, forget what he looks like, or forget how rah-rah he is, or forget the chest beating and forget the style, but just listen to him. And I loved him. I loved him, right? And I've always liked Tony Robbins. And people go, oh, he's this, he's that. You know what? Whether or not you like him, or you like his style, or you don't, Tony Robbins and many others share some fucking great ideas. But the world loves to hate on motivational speakers. In fact, I was listening to a podcast. Joe Rogan's my favorite podcast. And basically he said the other day, who is he talking to? I can't remember. But he was talking to someone, and he said, you know, basically motivational speakers are all bullshit. And I'm like, Joe, I want to cuddle you, because it's not. And then he backpedaled a bit and said, well, they're not all that. But that is a really broadly held perception, and I understand why that perception's there, because that is true for many people. But there's also fuckwits in every industry. There's fuckwits who are singers. There are fuckwits who are bricklayers. There are fuckwits who work in television. You know, there are fuckwits in... And there are people who aren't genuine in every space. And I'm not saying I'm the high watermark. I'm definitely not. But I'm definitely not out to fuck anyone over. Definitely not. You know, we said, and it was just you and me before, tell people what I said when it was just you and me about the $10,000 and the $1 gig or the $10,000 gig.
You said you prefer to go with the cheaper paying gig, but to the more people, which is what you care about more than the money. So definitely got a lot of respect for that.
Yeah. And I don't say that because it sounds great. It's true. Like, I get excited about the opportunity to teach people the stuff I'm passionate about. You can't, even with Tony Robbins, like him or don't like him, you can't pretend for 35 years. You can't. You can't act for 35 years, you know. And that's not to say he doesn't fuck up or he has no flaws or I agree with everything. I definitely don't. Sometimes he says things I cringe, but other times I'm like, that's just fucking genius, you know. And so I think it's about, you know, who inspires you, what inspires you, how do I share my ideas and thoughts and, you know, messages with people in a way that connects.
Well, that's it. It's a very good look at the way you've done that. And let's dig a little bit deeper into the way Craig was, because you obviously, you know, you said you wanted to not like him, but you're open to the ideas and wanted to listen to this guy, to Tony and other guys like that. Were you always like this, or this has taken time to sort of mature into that?
I was always, good question. Wow. I was always fascinated with human performance and the idea of success. Not necessarily related to money or stuff or Olympic gold medals or Grammy Awards or landing the space shuttle or whatever, but just this idea of success and acceptance and approval and happiness and that, like, the human condition fascinated me. And when I lost a lot of weight when I was a kid, and then I experienced in my very small, tiny reality on planet Craig, a real shift in how people treated me and spoke to me and socialized with me, and even teachers treated me differently because now I was in a different body. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. I'm the same person in a different body. Well, actually the same body, but a different version. And I'm being, you know, and so I was really, but at the same time, I didn't think, oh, wow, people are terrible. I was more just curious. I wasn't hurt. and so as I kind of went on this odyssey of trying to figure me out, like figuring out yourself, you're really figuring out everybody in a way, because everybody's an overthinker. Everybody's insecure. Everybody wants to be loved, needed, wanted, valued. Everyone wants to belong. Nobody wants to fail. Everybody wants to succeed. Success is different things for different people. And when I started bodybuilding, you know, then I opened a new door on, you know, good stuff and bad stuff. And the good stuff was, wow, I'm starting to get in shape and I'm starting to build muscle and my confidence is growing. And the bad stuff was, now I'm becoming addicted and now I get my sense of self from my muscles and the approval for my muscles and all that kind of stuff. So, but it was, I think for me, the catalyst to all this stuff around how humans work and how we can create an operating system for growth and learning and development was working in gyms and having multiple conversations daily with people who wanted to be different. I want my body to be different. I want my diet to be different. I want my habits and behaviors and lifestyle to be different. And I'm 18 years old. I don't know. I'm like, fucking, well, this is how you do a squat and this is how you set the bike up and don't eat too much junk food. See you on Wednesday. Like, it's all very fundamental. But as you develop and then you start to have more conversations, I remember when I was 19, I was helping a dude. He was about 50. So I'm 19 years old. I'm still a teenager. And he owned a company and he was very successful, quite well known. And I remember him asking me questions like he was a child and I was some wise master. And he was this 50-year-old successful man. I'm thinking, shit, this is weird. This guy looks up to me and I'm a teenager. But in that moment, in that space, I knew much more than him, which wasn't much, but it was more than him. So I kind of thought, oh, well, if I behave a certain way and I teach and communicate a certain way, people will respond. Yeah. And it's like if I behave like a leader, and I mean, you know, without acting, but I do the things that I need to do to become a leader, become a teacher, become a coach, then people will respond, even if I don't feel good enough. You know, so I always felt, I still feel it at times. I always felt inadequate, insecure. I always felt not good enough. And, but I also realized that because I wasn't hugely gifted at anything, I just needed to work hard.
Yeah, well, that resonates with me as well, that feeling of that loneliness and not being good enough. So, like, for the guys listening, you know, do you say that to use that as fuel, or do you need to be beyond that? You need to just do it, like, for me, because of me, not because I want to impress A, B, or C?
I think you can use – I think you can do both, you know. Trying to impress people's not – generally not a great motivator, but I think at times trying to say impress your boss is not the worst thing. If you want him or her to go, fucking job well done, to get some recognition. But I also think, you know, the reality of saying, well, I don't have, for example, in my case, well, I don't have amazing genetics. I don't have a 300 IQ. I'm not a gifted athlete. I can't sing for shit. I can, you know, here's 12 things I'm no good at. That's not going to change. You know, if I wanted, could I learn to sing in tune? Probably. Could I learn to be a better? Could I? Yeah, could. But in terms of natural ability and just being gifted and being a little bit exceptional or special, that wasn't my reality. And you can whinge and sook about that, but it's still not your reality. So you go, well, I can complain about my situation or my circumstance or my environment or my lack of opportunity or my genetics, or, but then I'm still going to be in the same place, but just a bit more whiny, yeah. You know, and I'm doing nothing constructive to change. So because I stepped into the process of training early, I realized the value of application.
Application, yeah, that was a big thing I spoke to you about before, like those three little words you put together, the application of the information.
Mm.
It's like, you know, somebody can say a one sentence and it could change a whole life. Mm. So do you think that the catalyst for change can happen so simply, or is it something that you nearly need to work at? Like how quickly do you feel that could happen for any one individual?
The answer is, okay, so there's two things. You said, how quickly do you think it could happen? The answer is almost instantly. The other question would be, how long does it generally take? And the answer is fucking forever, right? Like most people who struggle with a thing, let's say, to be consistent with exercise, let's just pick a thing, right? Oh, yeah, but my back. Oh, yeah, but the weather. Oh, yeah, but work. Oh, yeah, but the kids. Oh, yeah, but whatever. All of that stuff. And that's cool. But the truth is that life is messy, and the truth is that exercise is inconvenient at times, and eating well is inconvenient, and creating success is messy and lumpy and bumpy and inconvenient. And so what we want is we want whatever it is we're going to do to be convenient and comfortable and quick and easy and painless, and that's not realistic. But the truth is, if we had to do something today, we had to. Because if we don't, there's going to be something die. We do it today. But we don't have to, so we don't. So we go, you know what? I'm doing it tomorrow. But we don't have to do it tomorrow either. And we don't have to do it the next day. We don't even have to do it next month. We're still going to be okay, and life will be going on probably, and we probably won't die. And see, the thing is, we don't, the most things that we really maybe should do, we don't have to in the moment. And so we spend our life delaying and delaying and denying and avoiding and waiting and procrastinating, and then we're 31. Or then we're 40.
Mate.
Or then we're 50. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so how quickly can we change? Very fucking quickly. How quickly will most people change? Not quickly.
Yep.
And I won't bore everyone with that story about my dad who changed instantly when he had a heart attack. After years of fucking around and procrastinating and not looking after his health, when he had all the resources and all the reasons just too hard, just too hard, has a heart attack and instantly changes thinking, habits, behavior, physiology forever. And that was 9 years ago. You know, the potential's there.
Yeah.
The willingness to do the work is the problem.
Yeah. So should we be asking ourselves the question of what could go wrong and use that as a motivation before the catalyst of a significant event like that? Like, how do you think we should play that in our mindset? Should be...
Yeah, that's a good question too. Look, I mean, different things work for different people. Some people will hear what I just said and go, fuck, he's right, I'm doing it. Other people go, yeah, but you don't understand my situation. Right? Different responses. I believe that we need to be ready to get uncomfortable because the starting point invariably is uncomfortable. And, you know, that thinking about the worst possible outcome is actually it's a psychological principle that you use it almost as a reverse motivator, like to move away from something rather than towards something. But, you know, I think the thing is that we are very emotional around a lot of these things, and we need to, if anyone listening to this goes, you know what, there's stuff that I really want to change. And in a moment of inspiration listening to this, they go, fuck it, that's it, I'm in, he's right, I'm shit ass, that fuck, I'm doing it. The chances are that won't be maintained because that's just an emotional reaction. So it's really about the recognition of what's working in my life and what's not. What's the thing that I'm doing that's self-sabotaging? What's the thing that I'm doing that's wasting my fucking potential or my genetics or my time or my resources? What's the thing or things that I am doing that I need to stop? One. Two, how do I stop them? Three, what's my process, my timeline, my accountability? So we start to get creative and resourceful around the whole thing. You know, I read some research the other day a lady did on, so when we're, can you check on your, I should know this off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure that the creative part of our brain is the right side. Do you remember?
Yeah, creative's right.
Yeah.
So, well, depends what research you look at. Yeah,
but so the creative part of our brain, let's go with right, it's one side. The story is going to be the same. So there's research that says that when I set a goal in my head or I say, you know, I'm going to lose weight or I tell you, I go, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, then that's just a creative kind of expression of my brain. I'm thinking about something that I might do. But as soon as I write that down, I now have to bring in the left side of my brain, which is the logical, rational, reasonable, because you can't literally write without thinking, without being in a process. So writing itself is a practical process. So just taking the goal of I'm going to lose 5 kilos in the next 5 weeks out of your head and putting that down onto a page. So now you're taking it from the theoretical and you're including a practical process. Increases the chances of you doing that because you're using your whole brain, not half your brain, both hemispheres of your brain. That increases your chance of doing it and maintaining it by 44%. Now, you've got no more potential. You've got no better genetics. You've got no more hours in a day. You've got no more reasons, but all of a sudden, you've just increased your chances by a lot. And so I think, you know, like a lot of people get inspired listening to lots of people, hopefully me, but lots of people. But I don't care how inspired they are. I care that they do something because inspiration doesn't change you. Inspiration might be the catalyst for behavioral change, but behavior changes you. You know, doing like changing your life is about changing your behavior. And yes, it might be preceded by an emotional or a cognitive impetus. But if all we have is the emotional or the cognitive impetus with no associated behavioral change, there is no change of outcome in our world, no lasting. So it's really about, I don't even know where we started with this, but it's really about stepping into the doing and not relying on that, as I've said many times, that emotional space of inspirational motivation.
Yeah, I'm loving the hacks, mate, definitely. So how would you feel when someone says to like a family or friend, be realistic.
Mm.
How do you feel about that statement? You know, there's two little words, be realistic.
Mm.
You know, how do you think?
Yeah. So I think Being realistic is good as long as we're talking about being realistic, not talking about being negative. Yeah. You know, it's like somebody could say to me, well, Craig, you just turned 56 and you're really busy and you've got all these things on and now you're committing to full-time study, blah, 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 blah. You really need to be realistic about what you're doing, right? And people have said that, not those words, but a version of that to me. And I get that. I get that might be their perception and I'm not mad at that. I'm not upset at that. But we all need to figure out what our own standards are and what's realistic or not for us, you know, and what's my threshold. You know, there was a time when for me it was realistic to work in the gym 12, 14 hours a day. It was actually realistic. I know it was realistic because I fucking did it for years. So that's real, right? For me to do that now, not realistic. I would hate it. It's not where I'm at. I've moved on mentally and emotionally. That's not realistic. So I think sometimes being realistic can be a cop-out for people who don't want to do work. I think being realistic is like an escape clause. Now, I'm not saying be unrealistic, but in the context of what you just asked me, you want to make sure that you are not rationalizing your own laziness. And that's what a lot of people are doing because this shit is hard. You want to be a success? It's hard. You want to be an awesome life coach? Well, welcome to the club. There's about 10,000 people in Australia probably studying similar stuff to you who all want the same outcome. You know, and that's not to say you can't. That's to say that if you just do what they do the same way, the same focus, the same intensity with similar talent and ability, you can't stand out. You can't stand out because 10,000 people are doing the same thing. You know, it's not standing out for ego's sake. It's standing out so that you can be a leader or you can be exceptional or you can achieve at a level which is unlikely but possible.
Well, yeah, I love that. And that's the thing too, because like you said, there are quite a few people who are doing it. And I think the personal development is getting very popular at the moment, like a way to make money or a way to crowded. Put yourself out there. Crowded, for sure.
Like podcasts, crowded. No, and I'm not even being funny. Every man and his dog's got a fucking podcast. You got a phone, you got two shitty mics, you got a podcast if you want. And that's not bad either. But don't just go, oh, I've got it, because you need to, if whatever it is that you're going to do, whether it's be a life coach, be a personal trainer, write a book or start a podcast, you need to go, great, what's my unique selling proposition? Why would somebody stop listening to what they're already listening to and listen to me or turn on to me or recommend me or keep listening to me? And I'm always, that's why I'm so grateful for my listeners. And I'm not just saying that because they don't need to come. They can listen to anything anywhere. There are heaps of people that have got brilliant fucking insights. So they can go anywhere they want. And so when people are loyal to, you know, what we're doing, how can I not be grateful? But I'm also aware with everything that we do. Like I said to you when we're having a coffee, all I care about from the listener experience is this good to listen to? Because if the content's amazing and blah, 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 but it's not good to listen to, yeah, we don't have a podcast. Mm. And if you, same with corporate speaking or whatever, coaching, if you've got great knowledge and great content, but you get in front and you're not of a group and you're not creating engagement and it's not good to listen to, you don't have a career, you know? And as a coach, so once you get through your course and you understand the, you know, the fundamentals of human behavior and you'll keep building on that knowledge. The question then is, how do I do this in a way which is not kind of just another version of the 8 million trainers that are already out there?
Well, that's the biggest thing. And that was flowing to the next question. Like, how do we bring that uniqueness? Is it just to be ourselves? Or do we find a way to sort of market ourselves in a different way? You know, what is the main motivation behind that? Like, how can we stand out in a crowded sort of environment?
I think if you are the person that is genuine and sincere about what you're doing and you genuinely want to help people in that space, people are pretty good at picking bullshit. People are pretty good at understanding and perceiving whether or not you're the real deal. And that doesn't mean that you can't also run a good business and make lots of money, but it just means that you're not all about the money. You know, and I think also in this space of, like, for example, I grew up in the fitness industry. And when I grew up in the fitness industry, there was essentially gyms. And then we had ladies' gyms, and then we had 24-hour gyms, and then we had F45, and then we had personal training, and then we had Step Into Life, and then we had CrossFit, and then we had, you know, there's just everything's been an evolution. Everything's always evolving. And I think sometimes we need to be able to innovate and create rather than just imitate, rather than just go, I'm going to wheel out, okay, I'm a coach now, so I'm going to sit down with my client. I'm going to use some NLP, some mirroring. I'm going to do a personality profile. I'm going to ask my four standard questions, and then depending where we go, here's my next four questions. And you do need a protocol and a process, but you also need to be in the moment, you know, because if you are all about the process and the protocol, you're not really being present with the person. And coaching and podcasting and all of those communication-based things are really about being able to be in the moment. And I think if you're coming from a place of service and genuinely wanting to help people, then I think you'll succeed. And I think in a lot of these spaces, whether or not it's, you know, trainers or coaches or whatever, like a lot of people are really just to sign people up front for get them across the line for 10 sessions, and it's all about that. And this, the moment that I feel like, even if somebody's got great skills, but the moment that I feel like they're way more interested in getting my money than helping me, then me personally, I'm out.
Yeah, fair enough. So being in that moment and having a flow with the client and things like that, and making sure that they feel important, that's what you're speaking of, to just be in that moment with them and more than thinking of 10 or 20 sessions away.
Yeah, and you should not become a teacher, coach, mentor, trainer unless that is just who you are. If your personality, if your nature is, I actually genuinely like helping people. See, I'm lucky because I do like helping people. And I've figured out how to make a career around that as well as a passion to explore. And so when I am sitting with somebody that I'm just helping, somebody that's been referred to me and they're paying me zero, and I'm sitting with them and I'm just as invested and present and focused and attentive as the executive from BHP that I'm sitting and coaching for lots of money per hour, I'm just as present and just as interested in helping the person paying nothing, because for me, the hourly rate, be it zero or a lot, doesn't change my nature. It doesn't change my intent. It doesn't change what I'm about. And you can't be all things to all people, but you know, if I'm doing, like Melissa said to me, I can't say this. I can kind of say it. So I got an opportunity yesterday to work with an organization that everyone would know. And we really like this organization. It's not a for-profit organization, but it's, let's just say, it's in the emergency services space, right? And I don't care what I get paid. I want to work with them because I love what they do. And for me, it's about having an opportunity to work with those people and share my stuff with them. And if the hourly rate was zero, I would still want to do that gig because I want that opportunity to impact. It's quite a lot of people and it's in a really important space. And for me, that would be an honor. That would be an honor to work with those people. So money doesn't come into it.
Well, that's awesome. And it's definitely what gravitated me towards your work as well, because I'm not going to name names, but you go to a lot of these sort of speakers events and at the end of it, they're trying to spruik some sort of program or something like this, and where you're all just, you know, nonchalant about all that sort of stuff and just going, I'm just here to teach you. And as a result, I myself, and I'm sure a lot of your other followers, want to go out and reach out and do more with you, whether it's buy your book or go to your weekend programs and things like that. And do you feel that that's a way that you can show how genuine you are, that you're not trying to hawk any sort of expensive programs?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, there's still, as I said to you when we had coffee, there's a practical reality. We've still got to pay bills and pay rent on, you know, our space that we have. And disappointingly, I have to pay Melissa, and, you know, which is unreasonable, but apparently she has a wage and a car and all these things.
So unreasonable.
I know, she's so fucking demanding. Oh, fuck, what was the question?
To do with at the end of events and selling things at the end of events.
Yeah, sorry, I got I personally I don't like I'm not comfortable selling stuff to people. I feel like I'm compromising for me anyway. Like, and I don't think people shouldn't sell. I think people should. But when I'm standing up there, you've probably seen me. Melissa hates how bad I am, and she's probably a close second to me, but
yep.
I'm like, okay, we got this thing coming up and it's on this date. If you want to come, come. If you don't want to come, don't. And there's some books up the back if you want one. If you don't, totally get. I'm terrible because I don't want people to listen to me for 3 hours and then go, oh, okay, it was just about getting us here to sell shit. Exactly. Because then my integrity is out the window and I'm not there for that reason anyway. But the practical reality is still, you know, we still have to, like, we're in Perth next weekend, well, depending on when this goes to air, but, you know, we've got to get to Perth, we've got airfares, we've got accommodation, we've got venue hire, we've got marketing, we've got all of these things that have to be, these not insignificant expenses that need to be covered to even break even.
Yeah.
So there's an element of risk and uncertainty there. So we are a business, but I still believe that you can have a value system that works in business, and we will over time probably make less money than we could, but I'll be happier and she'll be happier and we'll be doing better things.
Well, definitely, and as like I said, as a result, you're getting more respect that way, and definitely comes from me. Moving on, like to your books and things like that, because that's definitely something I would love to do eventually as well. How long does it take your process to think of that, or have to commit to writing a book? Like, is it something that just hits you, or when it does, or?
So I have a really simple process. So if I'll coach you right now for 2 minutes on how to write a book. So
I'll take that.
So let's just say, firstly, get clear about what you want to talk about. You know, it doesn't. You don't need a title yet. You don't need. It doesn't need to be super laser refined, but you go, I want to help people overcome fears. So it's a book about that, or it's a book about getting used to working through discomfort, or it's a book about self-awareness, or it's a book about, you know, creativity or whatever it is. So just get, you know, the space that you want to write in. And then, you know, so I have, and I've shared this before, but I'll share it now. And this works with writing books, this works with writing articles, and this works with standing on a stage and talking. So there's four things that I go through repeatedly in a book. And the first thing is, what's the idea? I'm writing this down as we go. What's the idea? What's the strategy? What's the bit of wisdom? Or what's the insight that I want to share? That's the first thing. So what's the thing that I want to teach someone? The second thing is, do I have a story that I can tell about that, right? So as I said earlier in the podcast, I might want to talk to people about the way that we create our own experiences and why that matters. And we call that subjective reality, or we call our reality a subjective reality. Three people in the same room, none of us having the same experience. So then I want to talk about subjective reality and why that matters. So now too, I'm going to tell a story about that, how I did this presentation and all these people came up at the end and they went, oh, that's fucking great. We love you, Harps. That's amazing. Give us a hug, sign my book, can I have a selfie? And then, and this has happened. And one person comes up and goes, you're a fucking dickhead, because I said something that they deemed to be offensive and they were offended and that was their experience and it was real, right? And so I tell a story around that. And then the third thing is, why does this matter? So why do I need to understand subjective reality? Why do I need to get this? Well, because you want to, so you, for example, Michael, you want to work with people, you want to coach people, so you really need to understand that what's coming out of your mouth and what your intention is and what your idea is not necessarily going to be their experience. Because if you assume that people think like you, you're going to be in trouble and you're going to create more disconnection than connection. So the first thing is, what is it that I want to teach people? The second thing is, what's a story that I can share around that? Because stories create emotional connection. The third thing is, why does this matter? And then the fourth thing is, how do I use this now practically? How can I apply it? So when I'm writing a book or I'm thinking about writing a book, I'm coming up with, like my last book, which is a really simple book called 20 Questions for Humans. I want to come up with stuff which is really easy to, you know, like, what's my life telling me? That's a good question. I didn't invent that question, but that's a good question. Let's put that in the book. What's it like being around me? Fuck, that's a good question too. Not because I said it, but that's a good question because it matters, you know. What will my life look like in 5 years? Well, fuck, that's a good question too, right? And so I thought, why don't I come up with some questions that I know will resonate with most people, right? And so I put the questions on the back of the book. I didn't put the answers, but I put the questions because I knew that once people saw the back of the book, that they were more likely to buy the book because I knew that they would want to explore those thoughts and ideas and questions. And so I would literally sit at my computer with an A4, not an A4 page, but a bloody document, and I'd write down an idea or a word or a thought. And the thought might be the value of discomfort. Then I leave that. Then I go, I might write year 8 swimming sports, jumbo. Then I might write my first business. Then I might write dad's heart attack. Then I might write losing 30 kilos. Then I might write getting fat again. Then, you know, so I just write down things that I know I can turn that word or that sentence into a paragraph. And each of those will be about a different thing that can relate to people about performance and happiness and transformation and growth and learning and evolution. And then I go, okay, so which bits do I don't even think about the order. I just write these things. And then eventually I write whole chapters, and I don't know if this is going to be chapter 2 or chapter 27. And then eventually, so you just start writing. You don't need to go chapter 1, word 1, sentence 1. It was a warm summer day. You know, you don't need to do that.
It was a Tuesday.
It was a Tuesday. I was wearing plaid. I was freeballing.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so I think there's no set. I write in a way that is a lot of people would tell you not to write. That is, I write conversationally. I start with and. I start sentences with and. I craigify, I mutilate words, I use words that are not really words, but people know what I'm saying, you know, like in the messiness of life, you know, in the messiness of relationships, in the inconvenience of fucking humanity and whatever. Like, this is just stuff that people, because life is messy, life is inconvenient, life is peaks and troughs and beauty and joy and pain and pleasure and excitement and catastrophe and, you know, death and life. You know,
well, yeah, that's it. And guys, everyone's welcome for that free coaching session there. Yeah, I'm trying to go for some gold here for you.
Yeah, well done. Good question.
But yeah, with that, your latest book, 20 Questions for Humans, why 20? Mm. Why not 10? Why not 30?
Yeah, just because, okay, all right. So there is, there's not our set formula, but there is a formula in terms of length of anything. And I like in the old days, back in the old days, Michael.
Back in your day, yeah.
Yeah, back in, steady on. But people used to be more likely to read bigger books. Like, a lot of people read big books. And these days, because our attention, like Gary V talks about day trading attention, like what we're vying for, people who have a business, especially an internet-based business or an internet-advertised business, is you're trying to get people's attention. So it's trying to now, whether or not that's to read something, watch a video, watch a podcast, listen to a podcast, listen to an ebook, pay attention to an ad. It's about trying to find the right formula. So for me, I'll probably, I might write one big book in my life again, but that will be something that I just write because I want to get that out of me. But I don't know that that will necessarily be a commercial success, right? What I do know is that when I write something around the 15,000, 18,000 word mark, that we're much more likely to sell that book. If I write an 80,000 word book of comparable quality, we'll sell the small book, probably 5 to 1, because most people don't want to read 80,000 words. Most people like to read a small book and go, I read a whole book. And that's okay too. Just like people don't necessarily want to watch a 12-minute video on YouTube, but they'll watch a 40-second video on YouTube. And so it's trying to find the right length. So 20 questions just worked out to be around 14,000 words. And it was really, that for me is about, I wanted to write a book that could be read in an hour. So the average person reads 250 words per minute. 60 minutes times 250 is 15,000 words. So that's how I came up with that formula for about 15,000. I wanted to write a book that people could read in about an hour. And also, but what I do is, so we had for that, we had 12 of 20 or so of, was it 20 or so of my listeners came up to the,
yeah,
it came up to our office, and I gave them all a draft before it had been published, gave them a red pen, gave them a few hours, said, here's a draft, here's a red pen, write whatever you want. Good stuff, bad stuff, this doesn't make sense, this is fucking brilliant, da-da-da-da-da. So you, it's great to do, you know, some group testing where it's all well and good for me to think something, but when there are 20 people that all have their own ego, attitude, personality, beliefs, process, understanding, method for reading and interpreting and downloading information, it's great. Because some people go, this sentence doesn't make sense. Or five people might go, I loved this bit. Mm. I go, well, cool, let's not change that. But you have to be, you know, to get good at anything, you have to be humble. You have to go, look, and if five people go, it's shit, you can't get mad at them. You've got to go, okay, why is it shit?
Mm-hmm.
How can I make it better? What would make more sense? What about this sentence or this idea is confusing for you? Yeah, well, I think da-da-da, cool. Okay, what if I explained it this way? Does this make... Well, yeah, why didn't you say that? Okay. You know, so that's why, for me, everything has been in an evolution. So the way when I started training clients, I over time, I changed the way that I trained them as I evolved and I learned. And not only from a scientific point of view, I changed the way I trained them, but I changed the way that I... set up my business, and I went from 1 hour sessions to half hour and 45 minute sessions, and 1-on-1 to 2-on-1 to 3-on-1 to, you know, 3-on-1 to small groups to working with elite athletes to, you know, so all of a sudden this very simple 1-on-1 for an hour, Craig training one person for 60 minutes, that's his job. Now there's 30 variations of that initial concept because there's a demand for it.
Well, that's it. And so you think there's a role of constructive criticism, but taking it in the right way and trying to get that feedback in order for us to improve. Like, do you think people should take that on the chin? And,
definitely. Yeah. Like if you, you know, my goal when I give people feedback, and you need to be careful, but I don't give people feedback unless they ask for it or unless I'm in a situation where I'm running something and they're part of that. But my intention is to help them get better. But often the things we need to hear are not the things we want to hear, you know. So it's like I said to – remember I said to you the other day, you say – I wanted to give you some feedback.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went, oh, no. And you're like, no, I want to know. Yeah. And I'm like, nah, it doesn't really – I can't remember. But you just say this thing. It's like you could tell me fucking 50 things I do wrong. I'm okay with it because I do a million things wrong. But – you often finish a sentence with and things like that.
Yeah.
And
or things, that side of things.
That side of things. Yeah. That's right. You say that a lot, but you only say it on the podcast.
Yep.
And that's like Melissa's sentence finisher when she hasn't got anything to say. It's like, yeah, she can't finish the sentence and it's and things like that.
Or et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Like,
so,
what does that actually mean?
Yeah. And it's not a bad thing. It's just like, do you know that you do this? Oh, yeah, actually, I didn't. But yeah. And so you can't fix the thing you're not aware of.
Yeah.
Now, I get more positive feedback about her than me. So she's doing great. But it's really, okay, so I'm not you. And for me sitting over here, And there was one podcast in particular where you said that about 8 times.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
And I which really is not appreciate a terrible, that. It's yeah, not a terrible thing. I'd like to improve it.
But this is
like,
the whole thing. We can't be fucking precious.
Yeah.
Like none of us. Do you want to learn, grow, evolve, get good, build resilience, be strong, be fucking, you know, do you want to dominate or thrive or survive or, you know, then stop having a fucking breakdown every time someone says, hey, here's an idea or a suggestion. Yeah. Just hit the pause button and go, are they right? Because nobody that I work with, nobody's trying to hurt anyone.
Mm. And like, particularly if you've asked for that feedback.
Oh, like. Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Michael. Exactly. Where are we up to with time while Michael regroups and thinks of his next question?
We are
and he's going very well.
He's going very well. We are sitting on the hour mark.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe let's do 3 or 4 more questions, mate, and we'll see if we can wrap up in 10 or 15 minutes. You're going very well, by the way. It's worth the bus trip.
Thanks, boss. No worries. Fucking hell. Content for you, mate. But overall, it's just like you were talking about before. It's like, is it the perception of the situation? Because we're happy to go to the gym and maybe kill ourselves in the gym, but then we hate to hear criticism, like you know, from our partner or maybe from work colleagues and things like that. But yet, in the situation of a gym, we're happy to push all the heavy weights. We understand that we need work on. Mm. But then on the outside too, we're like, oh no, we know everything.
Well, I think we're very comfortable in some environments and uncomfortable in others, and we're happy to get uncomfortable at the gym. We're maybe not happy to get uncomfortable in a deeper, meaningful, emotional conversation with a partner, you know, or we're happy to have those deep and meaningful conversations, but we won't go for a run because that fucking sucks, you know. So there are, you know, like I know there are things that I'm more comfortable to talk about than other things, you know. I'll pretty much talk about anything now, I think, but over the years where I would talk about some stuff very easily, stuff which might make other people uncomfortable, but then there'd be certain things that I would avoid, right? And it's just so we can put ourselves in certain situations which might be typically uncomfortable or, you know, difficult, but we're fine with it because we're, for whatever reason, but, you know, so for me, it took a long time for me to be comfortable with committing to, for example, signing a lease and like even loaning money or not that I've, I think I loaned money once, but all that kind of stuff where I didn't want to be vulnerable in that way. I'd be vulnerable with other things, but not with that or to trust people because I've been fucked over a lot by people as everyone has. So for me, I'm like, I'll trust me because I know what I'm going to do, you know? But I'm a lot more, with some people, I'm a lot more trusting these days. But I think, you know, I don't know if I even answered your question. I feel like I went around in circles, but.
It sounded good though.
Thanks.
Well, let's throw another big question at you. The role of instant gratification with people, how much do you think that affects a lot of people's decision making when it comes to personal development or improvement?
Yeah. So we are kind of pleasure junkies, in that we like, you know, we like junk, and I'm generalizing, but we like junk food and we like alcohol, some of us, and we like, and not that we shouldn't like, well, maybe we shouldn't, it's up to us, but, you know, there's that thing that, you know, whether or not it's food or whether or not it's drugs or whether or not it's alcohol or whether or not it's sex or whether or not it's praise or whether or not it's Facebook likes or whether or not it's a cuddle or whether or not it's lying on the floor with a puppy or whatever it is. There are some things that instantly make us feel good. Some of those are more healthy. Some of those are less healthy. But sometimes, you know, what's required is to delay gratification, you know. So especially an obvious example is in the food space. So the thing is, and I've given this example before, but let's say, for example, the guy who needs to lose 50 kilos. So he, and I actually told a literal story about this and I won't repeat the whole thing, but a guy that I met with, he literally went straight from me and to a bakery. Did you hear that episode?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. And then so he went from me and promising that he was going to change his life and do all of this, do all of that. And he was in tears and we hugged and we had this whole fucking plan and I was going to call him, you know, in a week and we were going to get together in 4 weeks. And he was so appreciative and grateful and that it went straight from me. And unfortunately for him, he didn't think it through well because he stopped at a bakery about 800 meters away from my gym. And also stupidly sat out the front eating fucking pies and cream cakes and drinking a chocolate Big M. And, you know, so what you think, how on earth can that guy, after that conversation and that level of emotion and opening all those doors, talking about, yeah, I hate my body, I'm sick of it, I've got to do this. And I'm not saying he should hate his body, by the way, but he hated the way he looked and felt. And so then the question is, well, why did he do that? Well, the answer is, in part, well, the reason he did it is because he can sit down and eat whatever it is, 2 pies and 5 donuts and chocolate milk or whatever it is, and have instant pleasure. But if he drives past the bakery and goes home tonight and has a fucking salad, which he doesn't want and gives him no joy, there's no instant gratification, one, and there's no weight loss, right? So I'll eat the shit and start tomorrow, right? So the one will give you instant gratification, but the other won't give you instant weight loss. So that's the problem. There'll be weight loss over time, but the gratification with losing the weight, changing the body, looking different, functioning differently, feeling different, that is a slow process over time. Whereas getting a dopamine spike through a fucking Krispy Kreme donut, that takes 5 seconds and it feels amazing. Then you have another one. And then 10 minutes later, you feel like complete shit and you hate yourself and you're like, I'm a fucking loser. Why did I do that? So it's a circle and a cycle. And so the challenge for a lot of people in terms of really learning, growing, evolving is to be able to delay gratification and do the hard thing and keep doing the hard thing till it becomes the natural thing. And when it's the natural thing, it's not hard anymore.
So that's the thing. It's more about the habit change more than anything else and getting used to that habit. Did you have a philosophy about that? You know, everyone says, oh, it takes 28 days, it takes 66 days. Drop some knowledge on them. Like, how far do you think it takes? Do you reckon it can just be, once again, instant? Or do you reckon it takes time to really develop that discipline?
I personally think that those generic numbers are stupid, and I don't know where that research... Usually what happens is somebody will do some research and it's like, oh, we had 15 subjects and they did this and that, and they get... and the average time it took was like 15 subjects. One took 30 days, one took 107 days, one took 83 days, one took da-da-da-da. And then they get those 15 subjects, which is not a big cross-section at all. They divide it by, or they average it out and they go, well, it's 47 days. Well, for who? For those people in that environment, in that study? And so we get these arbitrary numbers wheeled out, like it takes 21 days or it takes 30 days to change a habit. I think that's complete garbage. It's unscientific. I think it depends on the individual. I think it depends on the how ingrained that habit is, how deep that is. And I honestly think, like, when we're talking about changing a habit, we're talking about changing subconscious programming. We're talking about the mind on the deepest level. So we're talking about a cognitive and a behavioral thing. So it takes as long as it takes. And I know, like, for me to change my habits with food, and I'm not a dummy, and I was working in this space, I would say really it took me to go from where I had an unhealthy relationship with food, where I couldn't even trust myself, even though I had knowledge, even though I was working as a trainer, even though I was allegedly smart. I was doing dumb shit and I was hiding behaviors because I was out of control with food, because food was my drug. I would say from then, when I was most out of control, to when I was in control and I went, right, I've got this sorted now for the most part. For me, I reckon 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people, though, it might be, you know, you might reset within 6 months or 12 months, but there's always that, for a lot of us, there's always that propensity to backslide, so to speak. So to completely reprogram your conscious, subconscious, unconscious, and your behavioral operating system so that this is you, you don't do that anymore. You are a different human being with a completely different operating system in a different paradigm. It takes a while. It's not fucking 30 days. It's not 21 days because you're resetting yourself from the inside out.
Yeah.
We can change behavior in 2 days, but don't think that you've rewired your normal operating system. Changing behavior quick, but keeping it changed, slow.
I can change my behavior tomorrow. I can go tomorrow, I'm a vegetarian and I'm eating only vegetarian food. And for the next 28 days, I'm eating only vegetarian food. The chances of me doing that for the next 30 years, zero. But just because I'm eating vegetarian doesn't mean I'm a vegetarian. It means I'm doing this thing for a while. And I'm not saying we should or shouldn't be vegetarians. I'm saying don't confuse changing your behavior temporarily with creating a new habit. Because creating a new habit is long-term. Changing behavior temporarily is a short-term thing.
Absolutely. Well, you know, let me say one more thing, Craig. I can call you Craig. I think we're friends now.
Sure, we go back.
What would be your legacy when all is said and done? What sort of legacy do you want to leave for, you know, the generations to follow?
Yeah, wow, that's deep. I don't know. I would just hope that I served... this sounds bullshitty, but I would just hope that I impacted people's lives in a good way. You know, I'm quite... I have a funny thing about life and death, and I feel like, you know, I don't think we're nearly as important as we think we are. I don't think I'm nearly as important as I used to think. I think I'm just a bloke with thoughts and ideas and a couple of skills, and I share stuff. And hopefully when I go, that people will maybe... Would you miss me?
Of course I would miss
you. Okay, well, that's good. Well, at least three people will miss me. Would you miss me, mate?
Maybe.
Yeah, okay. So 3.5. No, good answer. At least you're honest. But I would just hope that people would go, he was a good dude and he helped people and he came from the right place, you know. So, mate, you've done very well. So thank you for the big journey all the way from bloody Canberra. And he figured he got a train from the city to here. How did you figure that out?
Impressive.
Mate, you know, just got to adapt to the situation, eh? Make the most of it.
And on a Saturday as well. Very good.
So if people want to follow you, are you on Instagram and all those things?
No, just on the Facebook. You know, I've done my own little thing, Marcus Itch Coaching, but very baby steps. You know, still working on that. Definitely following in the Craig Harps sort of way, but definitely just sort of reach out. But from here, mate, I've got a lot of work to do.
Well, mate, you've done very well, and I love the fact that you asked really good questions. You didn't have anything written on your paper, and you were very present, so well done you. So good luck with your coaching. Good luck with your trip back. I hope they don't wake you up halfway for a rest.
No, maybe you've got something good to listen to or good to keep you entertained.
Oh, the U Project. I've got to keep listening.
Exactly. All right, mate, have a good trip back. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, I love this job. What a great job. Just talking about stuff, interesting conversations, interesting explorations into the way we think and behave and choose and do and create on planet Us. This wouldn't happen without the support of my major sponsor, Max's and Maxine's. So thank you guys for providing great supplements to Australia for over 3 decades and to me personally for a decade or so. My abs and I thank you. If you need to get in shape, if you want that part of that process to be well supplemented, then head to maxes.com.au or maxinesburn.com. That's kind of the ladies' area. Maxes is more the dudes, but there's a bit of interchange there. So I know lots of girls who use Maxes products as well, either or both. Thanks for your support, Maxes, and thanks for being a part of this, everybody.